The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada, live inside the Beltway. I'm Hugh Hewitt on a Friday. Good Friday morning to you. It's a great Friday morning for those of us who are Browns fans. Big win over the Broncos. It's always so sweet to beat the Broncos. And I know that's the lead story of the day, but I can't spend all my time talking about it. But it was really wonderful. Baker Mayfield's all banged up. He's out for 10 days. He can't make his 51st consecutive start. Chubb is gone. Hunt is gone. OBJ and Jarvis Landry have three good legs between them, and then other, you know, two offensive tackles. Well, they won. They beat the Broncos. That's all that matters. The weekend is already a victory weekend, so happy Victory Friday, Cleveland Browns fans. Flying to Ohio myself tomorrow to moderate the debate along with Aaron Baer of the Center for Christian Virtue in Ohio in front of 1,000-plus people, six Republicans coming together in Columbus, and 98.9 The Answer. We'll be broadcasting it. Well, I'll play you the answers as well. I love moderating debates. One of the great things. I've already begun debate prep last week and sharpening it up. And that will be, to me, a very good roadmap of where the GOP is a year out from the big election and 2 weeks out from Virginia, where Youngkin is just surging. Glenn Youngkin is really surging in Virginia. And getting early votes in, the campaign's got to focus like a laser, and it is. And Youngkin is doing what businessmen do. They identify and they execute. And whether you're Meg Whitman working at HP or you're Glenn Youngkin at the Carlyle Group, you focus and you execute. And he focused on early voting. He's asking Republicans to get out there and early vote, and it's working. Yesterday, if you watched the game, the Browns game, you saw President Obama pop up with an ad for Terry, I'm drowning, help me, McAuliffe. And it didn't help. The education issue, even at the same time that Loudoun County, one of the biggest counties in Virginia, most significant electorally, too, it's where Democrats have taken away previous Republican strongholds in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Yesterday, the Loudoun County basically admitted school board to a cover-up of a student rape under very sketchy circumstances that may have involved a boy who's claimed gender fluidity assaulting a girl in a high school girls' restroom. And the circumstances and facts haven't made it yet a national story, but it will become a national story. It's school boards cutting parents out to protect themselves. It's teachers' unions not responding to students being assaulted because they're just not doing it anymore. Resource officers moving like they did at the terrible Parkland shooting slowly when they should be acting with dispatch to come to the assistance of students. But that's for later. Let's celebrate the Browns and then tell you the other good, great news. Before I do the tragedy, the CDC signed off on the Moderna and J&J boosters for everyone. Okay, so the last time around, they were doing the Pfizer booster, and the FDA advisory panels let equity issues get mixed up in there. As Dr. Collins and Dr. Fauci told me on this show, equity, you know, maybe the United States is using too much vaccine. And so they screwed up the whole guidance on that, and they limited it to 65. I keep thinking, if anyone died at 64 because they didn't get a booster, that's on those stupid advisory panels. This time, good, crisp, clear guidance. If you got the Moderna and the Johnson & Johnson, walk in and get any booster. They haven't changed their earlier guidance on Pfizer in order to sharpen the message. And that, I wonder if they're just, they're feeling ashamed of that. They just need to sharpen it. Everyone go get a booster. 6 months after your last shot, go get a booster. And the J&J people, it's recommended by a couple of experts, get one of the mRNA boosters. So that's good. That's terrific. Additional progress will be made. There's good news coming out all over the country on virus numbers dropping. I'll come to the president in a second. The big tragedy yesterday with Alec Baldwin on the set of Rust, discharging a prop weapon, killing the director of photography and seriously wounding, I don't know if the guy is director, two young people with, who knows, they're 40 years old, so they must have small children if they're married and have been at the marriage business for a while. I would guess that's just a terrible tragedy. And people took to Twitter last night to express joy at what they feel must be grief because they on Adam Baldwin's part. Of course, he's going to feel grieved. I know he said terrible things before. Twitter and social media is a great place for sports fans to talk trash and a terrible place to talk about tragedy. Families of innocent people have got nothing to do with politics are impacted forever because of this. Just a terrible tragedy. Prayers for Halnya Hutchins' family, who was 42, and Joel Souza, who's 48. We'll get details if they come up during the show today. Say a prayer for the Haitian missionaries. They're from Ohio. I'm going to Ohio. They have been taken hostage, 17, and the Haitian kidnappers yesterday threatened to kill missionaries unless they were paid $1 million each, and they did it boldly on video. I want to talk now about the president's presser. Now, I'm always honest with you. You can trust me on this stuff. When I tell you I need you to support Alliance Defending Freedom, it's because they need your support. If I tell you to use Relief Factor, it's because of Relief Factor. I'm going to tell you straight up, I did not watch this town hall last night. The Browns were on Thursday Night Football. I had to put up with the inevitable John Elway clips. Oh, it's so sweet when you beat the Broncos and you're a Browns fan. Earlier in the day, I don't think he'd mind you telling you this. I was emailing with Archbishop Chaput in Philly, where he's retired. And I finally figured out that when he was the Archbishop of Denver, he really couldn't tell me what he thought. He's really a Chiefs fan. He's a Steelers fan first, then he's a Chiefs fan. Those are his two childhood teams. And, I mean, a Steelers fan. I pray for the Archbishop about that. But said Browns were number three above Broncos. Archbishop, that will really upset your Chaput. And I now learn that I finally have got it right, because Dwayne did the thing for the audio dyslexic, which is to spell it phonetically. So it's S-H-A-P-U-T. So, Chaput, I don't know why you didn't do that 20 years ago. I wouldn't have.
You know, you missed it going into this bit, right?
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
I got to go on with the news. I'm sure I didn't. The other stunning news is that Lyft, along with Uber, the two great ride services in America, Lyft has recorded more than 4,000 cases of sexual assault over 3 years in their vehicles. And I thought, what? And so I've got to dig into this report. It's a safety report. 4,158 instances of sexual assault on the app. And I wish they would include data for non-consensual kissing, touching, etc. And it gets all the way up to rape. And their drive, what? And so Uber's apparently got the same deal going. And I just have never thought of Uber or Lyft as putting people in harm's way. How do they even survive the liability for that? I mean, I know they're independent contractors and all that, but if you're operating in an environment where there's a known risk, you have a duty to warn. That's just old school tort law. I taught torts 20 years ago before I started teaching con law exclusively. We'll find out more on that. Fear on Cape Cod. There is an enormous article in today's New York Times about the Great White's return to Cape Cod. And it's one of those things I started reading yesterday afternoon when it went up, and I had to print it off. I had to print it off to take with me to Columbus, because if you're my age, you're actually going out on dates when Jaws came out. And that's me. And I think people who saw Jaws in theaters for the first time will always stop and listen to it. That's why the whole network, that the Shark Network, they could run a shark cable show. If you're watching this on Salem News Channel, which you should get that app, by the way. We're going to go 24/7 pretty soon, Salem News Channel. You'll be able to watch this every morning from your iPhone. The pictures of the great whites that we've got up are just terrific. But I didn't know they were coming back in larger and larger numbers in Cape Cod. That has not stopped real estate prices from Cape going from nuts. But I really didn't know that. I'm going to change my bet. You know, the Pacific people, the great whites, stay way out there. They don't come in except for the very rare attack on a surfer or something like this. But Cape Cod, those numbers are bad. Now, let's get to the most important thing about the Browns win last night. They needed it. They're in the valley of hurt with everybody decimated. Baker's shoulder is torn. His shoulder upper bone has got a hairline fracture in it. I said OBJ and Jarvis. Jarvis is the heart and soul of the Browns, and they've been out. Jarvis delivered last night in a big way. But this rookie, Durance Johnston, carries for 146 yards. He's not a rookie. I mean, he's third back, third man up. Not a rookie. Undrafted free agent. Had a tough road. He's walked it. He's an unrestricted free agent this summer, which means how he played last night in one of his rare starts. He's never had a start. That's how rare it is. Would determine how much he got. Guy just killed it. He looked unbeatable. Tony Romo couldn't start. When we come back, I'll play what Kirk Herbstreit had to say about the Browns this year in the summer to me. But first, I want to talk to you about Alliance Defending Freedom. They've got so many clients. We need them so much in the United States today. Please go to HughHewitt.com and click on the Alliance Defending Freedom banner. They sponsor the show. I love these people. I need you to support them. I need some big donors to step in, a lot more small donors to step up. The phone number for ADF is 855-359-9644. We've raised about $35,000 in just a couple of days of asking you people for going out there and donating. But we really need to keep them in the field in this year of all years when the Supreme Court is deciding so much. Please budget a little contribution or as much as you can to Alliance Defending Freedom. And I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt for Birch Gold. If you found yourself completely befuddled by events in Afghanistan, alarmed about inflation and otherwise uneasy, well, about everything, about Americans standing in the world, about what comes next, then you're feeling like everybody else is, and uncertainty is usually a time that you want to increase your holdings in gold. When I do that, I do it with Birch Gold. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. You can go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747. They will send you free information. If you want to roll over a portion of your IRA or your 401k into physical precious metals, Birch Gold is who to do that with. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, thousands of happy customers. If you're thinking, I got to get some gold, do it with Birch Gold via HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's Hugh to 474747 or HughGold.com. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. That's the official song of the Hugh Hewitt Show official movie critic, Sonny Bunch, who you can follow on Twitter at Sonny Bunch, and always get his podcast, Across the Movie Aisle. Sonny, we've got to cover two things today. I hope you've seen Dune, and we got to talk about Alex Baldwin. Now, I do not believe that tragedy should ever be the occasion for owning people. And I can't believe people. The director is 48. The director of photography is 42. This is really bad. So your order, I hope you love Dune, and I don't really know what to say about Alec Baldwin.
Yeah. Well, the Alec Baldwin, I mean, look, so for folks who don't know, Alec Baldwin shot two people on the set of the movie that he's working on right now, kind of a movie called Rust. It's a Western, neo-Western type sort of thing, indie, major indie, you know, it's not a tiny indie, a major indie. I don't want to speculate on what happened. I am sure that we will find out more in the days to come. All I will say is that it is tragic and that you know, the interesting thing about movie sets is anytime you have a gun on set, there's usually a guy who's in charge of the gun, the prop master or an armorer, who is very closely watching who touches the gun, who has access to it, you know, when it's loaded, when it's not loaded. And what is a little bit strange about this story is that it doesn't sound like it happened in the middle of a scene that was being shot, right? Like every once in a while there's a tragedy on set where somebody is killed when a gun that was supposed to be, you know, either firing blanks or whatever kills an actor because the actor, you know, was being, you know, shot in the scene. That does not sound like that was what was happening here. So, you know, who knows what actually happened, if it was a malfunctioning prop gun, if it was a lack of care and safety on set with a gun that was loaded. I mean, I don't want to speculate on any of this. I mean, all we know right now is that the director of photography on this movie is dead, and that the director himself was pretty badly injured. So, you know, sad story. I'm sure we'll find out more as the days go by and the unions and everybody else, you know, do investigations into what happened.
But Sonny, do you agree with me? Anyone who is taking joy in Alec Baldwin's grief is just sort of off center. It's just like, really,
yeah, I mean,
doesn't, you know, matter how awful he's been in politics or what he said or tweeted before.
Right.
It's all about the director of photography and the director. It's not about Alec Baldwin.
Yeah. I mean, people look, I tweeted something like it doesn't take much effort to be decent, and not
yes.
tweeting
yes.
requires, you know, the least amount of effort of all. And I firmly believe that. And I understand the, you know, desire for people to dunk on a guy that they perceive as a political enemy. You know, this is just the world in which we live. You do not look good if you are spending your time right now, you know,
your heart can't be good. Your heart can't be good. And I'll tell you what, Twitter is not the real world where people go to expose the worst things about themselves. And it's just, if you're dancing around because Alec Baldwin accidentally killed somebody, you got to do a gut check. Now, let's get to the happy stuff. Please, please, please tell me that Dune is good. I love Dune. I read the books decades ago. I reread them. Tell it. You get 5 minutes. Dune us up, Sonny Bunch.
Dune. Here's the thing about Dune.
Oh, no.
Dune is very much one half of one movie, Hugh. That is,
oh, okay.
That,
that's fine.
What we're looking at here, and this it hasn't really been marketed this way. It has kind of, in if you read the trades and stuff, you know, there's been talk about how this is, you know, the first movie, it's part one. You know, at the start of this movie, there is a title card that says Dune Part One, and this is very much, look, it's. There are a lot of good things about this movie. I like the look of it, the acting. We can talk about the acting in a moment here. It's all quite good. The problem with this movie is that it is very simply one half of a film. It just stops. The story just stops right in the middle of where the book. It stops in the middle. I mean,
people can stop wherever they read the book first anyway, so then you can stop at halfway point.
You should absolutely read the book first anyway, because the other problem with this book is that it is an exceptionally efficient book, it's an exceptionally efficient movie in that it moves you from plot point to plot point and scene to scene, but it doesn't really linger on anything, and as a result, some people may find themselves a little bit lost. So, again, here's the basic story of Dune. In Dune, the Atreides house is a royal house in the intergalactic empire of, you know, blah blah blah, whatever. The Atreides house is asked to go to the planet Arrakis to mine spice. What is spice? Great question. If you just watch the movie without reading the book, you will probably not have a very good idea of what spice is. In the movie, you are basically just told, well, it's needed for galactic travel. They need it to run the spaceships, to ship everything around the universe. And I guess that's all you really need, kind of, but it does leave folks kind of wondering, well, why do they need this psychotropic substance to pilot their spaceships? There are things that are left out in the explanation that I'm kind of surprised by. Anyway, the Atreides house has to go to Arrakis to mine the spice. They are taking over for the Harkonnen family, which is a notoriously cruel family that has, abused the people of Arrakis, the Fremen, and they are hated. They are wicked. Blah blah blah. Well, the Atreides house has been sent to Arrakis. It's a trap by the Emperor. He wants the Harkonnens to go back and take the planet over and kill all the Atreides. And all of this, again, if I sound perfunctory, it is because the movie treats all of this political intrigue and all of this, kind of backbiting and backfighting in the most perfunctory way possible. There's a lot of telling and not showing. It is, people have kind of compared this to Game of Thrones, this new movie to the TV show Game of Thrones. But at least with Game of Thrones, there was, you did get some of the actual political infighting and some of the intrigue and all of that. And this,
you knew from the beginning if you were with House Stark or House Lannister. You know, you could figure it out. Now you don't know whether you're with Paul or the other guys. But if you've read the book, and you obviously have, what's the verdict, Sonny?
The verdict is incomplete. It's incomplete, Hugh, because it's one half of one movie. I don't know how they're going to pay off.
Is it a good half?
They've set up. It's good. Look, here's the thing. I did enjoy it. I was never bored in the movie theater. Okay. It looks beautiful. It's got a really, if you go see it in a movie theater, which you should, go see it in IMAX or, you know, Dolby Atmos or whatever. It is a good big Lawrence of Arabia style, you know, desert epic, right? And I love the sound design is wonderful, especially if you watch it on one of these big theaters, like the voice that the Bene Gesserit use, the like kind of commanding witchcraft. They do a really interesting thing with the sound design of that. It's a super kind of deep and high pitched at the same time noise that rumbles right through you in these big theaters. I mean, it goes like right through your chest, and you can it's almost a physical thing. You can almost experience what the Bene Gesserit are getting at with this and why people would obey them.
Would you explain a little? Just give a little back note to who they are.
So again, this is another thing. The movie doesn't really spend a lot of time talking about the Bene Gesserit, which is essentially a coven of witches that have attached themselves to the great houses of the Galactic Empire. They're trying to bring about a chosen one, a sort of savior figure that Paul, who is played in this movie by Timothy Chalamet, his mother Jessica, who's played by Rebecca Ferguson, believes him to be the one.
Almost every epic fantasy series worth its weight is a Manichaeist take on Christian theology, and that's what Dune is. And people should know that it's not witches in the sense that they understand. It's they're wizards. They're like Harry Potter wizards, and you don't know who's good and who's bad, et cetera. But it's another layer of Manichaean overlay on an epic fantasy.
Yeah, again, it's all very interesting in the book, and there are layers on top of layers and all that. But in this movie,
plans within plans. Yes,
they're very perfunctorily dealt with. It's like, oh yeah, here are the witches. Okay, bye witches. And what I would desperately like is to just sit down, do like a focus group with 10 people who watch the movie but have never read the book and have them explain certain things to me, because I would be very curious what their takes are.
That's an interesting, that's a great idea. That's a great idea for their PR department ought to do that. Just, it doesn't matter what they say. It's a great idea. It's like Tenet. Cock walking out of Tenet, and I saw it with then National Security Advisor O'Brien. He had to leave the movie 5 times. He knew about as much as I did, because I had no idea what was going on in Tenet. So I'll bet you that's the Dune reaction. But what I hear from you, and I want to get 1 minute from you on Timothy, is that go see it if you're a Dune fan.
Yeah, you should go. If you like Dune, if you've read the books, I think you'll enjoy this. I mean, I think you might be a little bit frustrated by some of the shallowness of the political intrigue. I know I was a little bit, but I think if you are a fan of the books, you will at least understand what's going on here, and you'll enjoy it.
One sentence on Timothy.
I mean, look, I am a Timothy Chalamet skeptic. I find his whole presence to be vaguely annoying. But he's very, very good in this. One of the reasons I do find him annoying is because he is so talented. He's a very, very talented actor.
Sonny Bunch, that was just, that's why critics are lovely. I can't wait to read your review and to listen to you talk about it at Across the Movie Aisle. I hope you do. Sonny Bunch, the official movie critic of the Hewitt Show. You also can find him at Bulwark Goes to the Movie. Great. I love talking to Sonny. I really need hours with him, not 11 minutes. ReliefFactor.com. I tell you, it's another one of these weekends. I should just stay home 1 weekend and a half. I got to get up and run in the morning and go to Reagan, fly to Ohio, do show prep, debate prep. We have 6 great Republican candidates running for The nomination to replace Rob Portman, they're gathering in Columbus tomorrow on Sunday night. I'm moderating the debate along with Aaron Baer, and it will be great fun. But I'll have my relief factor. I just took it. That's how easy it is. And that's why yesterday I did five. This morning after I'm on with the Washington Post at 9 o'clock, you can watch Washington Post live at 9 a.m., I will be out there doing another five or six or seven. I don't know. I think tomorrow morning I get a long run in, a long trundle. I no longer run. I just trundle. But General McChrystal says he trudges around Northern Virginia. That's what basically I trudge too, but I pretend that I'm actually not trudging. It looks like trudging, but it feels like running. You don't know from the inside how slow you are. Go get your relieffactor.com. Come back for Doug Lemerese on the Hugh Hewitt Show. He hosts the College Football Playoff Show podcast. Stay with us. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. A little bit of a setup here. Doug Lemerese is my guest every week at this time, and he is really one of the best sports podcasters in the United States. That might be because he covers the Buckeyes and the Browns, and so I listen to all three of his podcasts. He's the host with Shahan Jayaraja of the national podcast, the College Football Playoff Show, which is must listening if you're a college football fan. But he also is on Orange and Brown Talk and on Buckeye Talk. So yesterday I listened to the Orange and Brown Talk, and his colleague, he got a great colleague, and Doug is a very expressive guy. Let's bring him up. Good morning, Doug. You must have had like 5 hours of sleep. 3 hours of sleep. I had 5 hours of sleep because Browns fans are, it's like 8 gallons of coffee to watch that game last night. And then I haven't listened to the podcast afterwards, so I'm hijacking the College Football Playoff Show podcast plug to ask you to explain to people why that game means so much to people like me who have been waiting since 1999 for a team.
Well, I mean, for the Cleveland Browns to beat their legendary foe, the Denver Broncos, without their starting quarterback, without their two top running backs, with their two best receivers kind of injured, without their right tackle, without their rookie linebacker, they found a way to win for a franchise that historically has not found a way to win since the Browns returned to Cleveland. So to avoid a losing record, to stay at 4-3 instead of 3-4, this would have been an excuse, Hugh, right? The excuse was right there. None of the best players are there. But they won anyway, and that's the winning team, and that's why everyone in Cleveland, including you, are very excited this morning.
And if anyone listened to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast, my boys came over for a pregame dinner show last pregame dinner. They went off to a bar to watch with their friends. I, of course, watch in isolation, ready to be epically disappointed. And I said, if you'd listened to Orange and Brown Talk, you would have heard two things. You would have had Mary Kay Cabot predict the John Johnson interception, and you would have heard Doug Lemerese say, just do your job. And then when you tweeted out during the game, John Johnson III just did his job, I said, sometimes a podcast and a moment meet. You must be very satisfied with your body of work on the Browns this week.
Well, you can sort of see it coming, too. I mean, I miss this stuff all the time. The key is, when you're wrong, don't tweet that. Don't remind people. But you have defense that trying too hard to make plays against great quarterbacks before. And then I said, when I wrote this morning, the best way to be reminded to do your job is to do your job poorly and pay for it, right? So
yes,
you know, that's what happened. John Johnson III made an interception by staying in his zone when the weeks before they were getting excited, getting over eager and trying to jump routes. Just do your job. Now, it's harder to do against better teams, but it's one of the reasons that the Browns won last night, because they did their job.
So I can't wait to listen to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast, but people tune into this because they want to hear about the most important college game last week and the most important college game this week. I've only given you 2 minutes within which to do that for the College Football Playoff Show podcast, which they should listen to in its entirety. But give us sort of the compact, highly concentrated Doug Lemerese. And you might throw in some Disney World advice, because I learned from yesterday's podcast that you are a Disney World expert, which you share with my producer, Generalissimo.
Yes, no, I'm happy to talk Disney anytime. Quickly on college football, one of the issues is that there aren't great games this week. So it's not as big of a deal.
There are no great games this week, but you were about to say but.
Sorry about that. Iowa got upset by Purdue last week at home. What all the contenders are trying to do right now is avoid those upsets. Watch for Sean Clifford, the starting quarterback of Penn State. He was hurt against Iowa a couple weeks ago. He's trying to get back healthy. The big deal, next week, Penn State at Ohio State is a huge game. Penn State needs Sean Clifford healthy. See if Sean Clifford can play this week against Illinois.
And last week, the big game was Iowa losing, of course. So, Dougley Maurice, just off topic, people send you questions at Buckeye Talk about best restaurants in Columbus and Disney World. I think you guys should go 3 hours every time you do a podcast. I went on a long run walk listening. That was terrific.
I mean, you're preaching to the choir here, Hugh. You know, the big wins at the company, the three-hour podcast is not normally how people like it. But as long as the questions are interesting, I could go 3 hours every day.
Yeah, that's why I think Doug's real calling is in sports talk radio. But he's a hell of a podcaster. Go get the College Football Playoff Podcast. Go get Orange and Brown Talk. Go get Buckeye Talk, which is, you have to listen to it to know why I just said Buckeye Talk the way I did. Thank you, Doug LeMaurice. Don't go anywhere, America. Back to the hard news. When we come back next hour, I've got Jerry Hendricks is going to talk hypersonics. Charlie Dombek is here to talk about the markets. And I'll go back over last night's, quote, town hall. She's our president. Well, when we come back, hour number two of the Friday edition of the Hugh Hewitt Show, live from inside the Beltway, I'm Hugh Hewitt. Joined now by the poet laureate of the Hugh Hewitt Show, Tarzana Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Hugh. You know, when so much is happening, it's hard to really pay attention to anything. As Democrats in Congress persist in tempting fate, I ask myself repeatedly, where is the debate? Your caucus is in trouble, enthusiasm's fading. Show us all your talent at informing and persuading. The bill is a monstrosity, no matter how you spin it, and though I've paid attention, I still don't know what's in it. What bridges will be reinforced? What roadways will be paved? Whose lives will be affected? What industries are saved? I'd like a few specifics, and tell us what they mean. Please let us know the target price you see for gasoline. The income tax is raised, I know, on those with Jags, not Chevys, but there are other taxes that this legislation levies. Where will this affect me? Why won't people say, I know the cost is zero, but how much will we pay? And while the Congress squabbles about IRS amounts, there won't be any dollars left in any bank accounts. The nightly news is silent. The media just snoozes. I want to know the facts, not just who wins or loses. So, Congress people, take your time. You're surely going to need it. And promise us, before you vote, for pity's sake, please read it. That's Just a Bill by Tarzana Joe.
Just a Bill has about just as much chance of persuading legislators to read it as the original cartoon did. Joe, I just don't believe they're going to read it, but I also believe that eventually we'll get to see what's in it and we won't like what's there. Tarzana Joe, is your website working?
Yes, it's back and functioning fully.
So there's the I Need a Poem button is working
fully,
in?
It is, yes.
Okay, so the I Need a Poem button is there at tarzanajoe.com. If you need a poetry bit of commissioned, I didn't say that right. If you need to commission a bit of poetry, write to TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com, TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com, or just go to TarzanaJoe.com and find that button. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, you.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. If you're part of our new audience in Horsehead, New York, WLNL, The Bell, 1000 AM. Welcome to the Borg, 400-plus affiliates tuning in every morning. I am glad to run the nation's news show in the morning. But on Fridays, we do things a little bit differently like the late, great Rush did. Because anything's fair game. So I can go from the Browns game and talking about Alec Baldwin and doing the movies, Dougley Maurice, to hypersonics. Because Dr. Jerry Hendricks, if you're just listening, is one of the preeminent military intellectuals working in America's public square today. Dr. Jerry Hendricks is a PhD historian. He's also Captain Jerry Hendricks, retired United States Navy. And a couple of years ago, he took me to lunch with his buddy, Admiral Monty Montgomery, so that I could get briefed on hypersonics. And since that time, I've been following this. And Jerry Hendricks, welcome back. Good to see you.
It's good to be here, Hugh. Thank you.
So this is the hypersonics 101 for the Steelers fans and the Purdue fans, who really, you know, we got to slow it way down for them. Can you... Jerry's a Purdue graduate. Can you walk us through why this is a... I've spent a lot of time this week talking about it, but some people still aren't clued in. This is a Sputnik moment.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that's the best analogy. And, in fact, in many ways, what we're facing right now is more Sputnik than Sputnik was. For everyone, you know, in 1957, you know, the Soviet Union launched an ICBM, and there was a great conversation in the United States about us being caught by surprise. Now, the issue then at the time was that we weren't really surprised. At least the president wasn't surprised. The intel community wasn't surprised. We've been monitoring that situation, and we weren't really that far behind the Soviet Union. We launched a satellite within a few months, and we had an active ICBM program going again within a year. So the gap, the missile gap that was described at that time really wasn't as great as what it was perceived. But the Sputnik moment itself infused the country with a great deal of energy. And President Eisenhower was able to use that to increase defense spending. He got five different missile programs going simultaneously. He created NASA at that time. We put a lot of money into education for science and engineering in the nation's universities and high schools. So it was a watershed moment in American history. Now, what we have today, though, is this hypersonic moment where the Chinese have done this orbital fractional bombardment test, which is really quite alarming because of the implications of that, the ability to go around the globe, in this case, over the pole and then over the South Pole, and then perhaps attack the United States or whoever they wish from whatever angle they want to. And it's something that is quite alarming. But let's step back for a second and talk about hypersonics and why they're different. First of all, virtually every ICBM that we've ever had is a hypersonic weapon. That just means that you're going faster than Mach 5 or about 3,500 miles an hour at the time that you're making an impact. But what is making these different is today what we're looking at is what we call boost glide weapons, which are weapons that are accelerated to a very high speed and then have the ability to glide and maneuver. It's the maneuver that's the problem. We've spent 35 years figuring out how to track ballistic missiles so that we've got all kinds of ballistic missile defense capabilities now. Well, what everyone has done, and by everyone, China and Russia, is they've now created these boost, glide, maneuvering high-speed platforms, which just increases the chance of survivability of the weapon and increases the chance that that weapon is going to make its kill. So we call that piece of S, probability of survivability, and piece of K, probability of kill. Hypersonic weapons are going to get to their targets. And that's the gap that now has been created. It's essentially, when you shoot this, it's going to hit what it goes after.
And pause on that, Jerry. Right now, we have the ability to interdict some incoming missiles. But hypersonic, I hear you saying, what we fear is that we will have no chance of interdicting them.
That is correct. And so the hypersonic weapon is the ultimate survival weapon. It's going to get through. We, at this point in time, don't have the capability to shoot down hypersonic maneuvering weapons. And I think that that's why we're making a lot of investments in things like directed energy or lasers or microwave type weapons that would be able to then be able to catch up. But we're not there yet. And so that's why this is a destabilizing effect in the international arena. And the fact that Russia and China appear to have operational capabilities, meaning they have weapons in the field, is what really has created this instability. We are not at what we call IOC, our initial operational capability, with our hypersonic systems now, despite the fact that we've been working on hypersonics longer than any other country in the world. We've been doing this since the 1950s. We simply have not brought them to fruition to create weapons that are fieldable at this point.
Now, you explained this in a very accessible paper, which you tweeted out this morning. I retweeted earlier this week. But what I want to get to, the key distinction, and I didn't initially pick up this, it's that the particular delivery system they used has got you doubly alarmed. Not only are they operational with their hypersonic, it's a different sort of delivery system. Can you expand on that?
Well, this thing about fractional orbital bombardment is really concerning because this is a very large rocket. First of all, it's something that's large enough to put something into orbit. But they designed this system, apparently, according to Financial Times story that came out last weekend, so that it skips along the Earth's atmosphere and then reenters and then comes in and then creates this fractional bombardment of the target area. So, you know, first of all, this is something that it's putting multiple different warheads, and some of them potentially nuclear, some conventional, you know, into a target area. This is, and it's also something that can reach from China to anywhere in the United States. Most of the hypersonics that we're working on right now are intermediate range, you know, less than a couple thousand miles, and would have to be fired from aircraft or ships at sea. This is something that can be fired from China. Mostly it's like an ICBM, but it's going to come in a way that's ultimately survivable and that we cannot shoot down. That's why this, again, is stabilizing.
Yeah, it comes in, I envision it, correct me if I'm wrong, in the way that in 1991, our accuracy surprised the Iraqi army by able to pinpoint bomb. And in 2003, when we invaded Iraq, it was even better. You can hit the target in a window, right? You can do that.
Yeah.
We are afraid that that kind of targeting ability is now in the hands of the CCP, PLA, and that they can launch many of these. So the nightmare scenario, I just want you to tell me whether or not we should worry about this within 5 years, is that they launch fleets of these things, and they hit 300 hardened targets, so that and the non-nuclear. They just sink our ships. They blow up our bases, and President Xi, General Secretary Xi, calls whoever's in the White House in 5 years and says, we didn't start a nuclear attack. Do not respond, because you only can respond with a nuclear attack.
I think the thing that bothers me about this, Hugh, is that the type of target that they could hit, sure, they could go after our military targets. But let's remember, China's strategic aim here is to keep the United States on the sideline and deter us from coming to the assistance of Taiwan while China establishes essentially regional hegemony over the Western Pacific, Eastern Asia type of region. What they have just demonstrated is the ability perhaps to hit our oil refineries in southern Texas, that they would fire something over the North Pole, circle around the South Pole, and then come into the United States from the south, hit critical infrastructure, and then say, now, do you guys want to escalate this, or will you stay on the sideline? They're trying to create a hedge within the United States in our strategic thinking that says, do you really want to jump in with us right now over Taiwan? And knowing that we can full well hit whatever we want to in the United States, not just military targets, but civilian ones as well. And that's the type of conversation that they want to kind of create this deterrence that where it would keep the United States from coming to the aid of our allies and partners in the region.
So let me play the president from last night's town hall with Anderson Cooper. Cut number 42.
China just tested a hypersonic missile. What will you do to keep up with them militarily? And can you vow to protect Taiwan?
Yes and yes.
The first question wasn't a yes. The first question is, what do you do? So, Jerry Hendricks, What do we, it's good to have clarity for China. They'll be upset with us today. That was the gap that they had to walk back last night. We don't say the quiet part out loud, but the president did. We will come to the defense of Taiwan. But what about the first part? What would you do if you were king of the world, not queen, not duke, not earl?
Well, I would do essentially what President Eisenhower did, which was President Eisenhower made the development of the ICBM his number one priority, bar none. And he issued a letter, essentially, whatever can be done in support of the development of intercontinental ballistic missiles shall be done. I think that if President Biden came out today and said the development of hypersonic weapons is my number one priority, and the platforms that carry them, by the way, because you have to have a delivery vehicle that goes with these. And so if you do that, I mean, with President Eisenhower, we had two intermediate range missiles, the Thor and the Polaris, that were developed almost immediately. And then we had three ICBMs, the Atlas, the Titan, and then ultimately the Minuteman. You know, right now we have four major programs going on in the United States. There is one by the Army and then one by the Navy that deals with the conventional prompt strike weapon. The Air Force is developing its Arrow weapon at this point in time, which would be launched from a bomber. And then DARPA is also developing a system right now. I think that if we put those as our number one priorities and got the money behind them, and then also the manpower, the scientists and engineers, build out those teams, and then, quite frankly, do the conversion of the type of weapons launch platforms, whether it's the B-1 bomber for the Air Force's Arrow, or the Virginia Block 5s for the Navy's conventional prompt strike, or the Army system, we have to put the money behind those resources now and really plus them up.
So to people just tuning in, I'm talking with Dr. Jerry Hendricks, who's also Captain Jerry Hendricks, retired United States Navy, terrific historian, public intellectual. You just used about five terms that the Steeler fans say, you know, DARPA, prompt strike. They're driving off the road in Pittsburgh right now. For civilians, we have to spend a lot of money immediately.
Yes.
And we have to explain this again and again. Does that sum it up? Because I don't think anybody actually, I'll bet you, I'm doing the Washington Post this morning. I bet you I have to bring this up with my friends at the Post.
I agree. And that's another part of this, by the way. So one of the reasons why Sputnik got a big bump at that time was at that moment there was a public commission called the Gaither Commission. That after Sputnik launched, about 2 weeks later, the Gaither Commission issued its work. It was sort of a perfect storm of timing, and they were able to kind of build that public conversation about the importance of ICBMs. We really need something that generates a public conversation about this challenge that we're facing. It's a science, engineering, and technological challenge right now, and that we're behind on. And so, you know, I would hope, I mean, that was one of the reasons I wrote my paper a year and a half ago, was to help drive this public conversation so that the American people understand that, A, this is going on, and, B, we're behind right
now.
It's
a good bet.
That's a position that Americans are not used to being.
It's a good bet that hypersonics will cross my lips at Sunday night Senate debate. So if I was actually listening, I was on one of the senator would-be teams, I'd find out Jerry Hendricks's paper, and I'd make my candidate read it. How's that for a poker tell, Jerry?
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, I want the Republicans who want to run this country to be aware that we are in a moment of strategic peril, and we haven't been there in a long time. Jerry Hendricks, good to talk to you, Captain. I always appreciate you being on. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Charlie Dombeck joins me from Key City Capital. Key City Capital is a great sponsor of the Hugh Hewitt Show, and people who listen, especially on our new affiliate in Horsehead, New York, will not know from WLNL The Bell, 1000 AM, that I have very few people on who talk about money other than Westbury. But Charlie and I had a great lunch a couple of months ago, and I said, okay, if they want to come on board, I'm going to have them come on because I trust their sophistication. Charlie, good morning. Have anyone been going to keycitycapital.com/Hugh? Anybody checking in with you?
Good morning, Hugh. Yes, we've had a barrage of people calling in and wanting help based upon the conversations that we've had over the last several weeks. In fact, we're bringing on more people to help field the calls and help people deal with many of the issues that we're contending with in today's economy.
And that brings me to today's question. The Wall Street Journal headline this morning, investors bet inflation pressures will linger. When you and I had lunch, you do too. And so how are you prepping people for that?
Yeah, the biggest concern we have right now is what's going to happen with inflation next year. And it was interesting last week, we had a significant rebound in the financial markets, and there was not a lot of discussion about inflation. I think the markets rebounded based upon earnings that were put out primarily by the financial institutions. And you've got to think about it. Banks got rich during the pandemic. They got paid enormous amounts of fees for all of the payroll protection PPP loans. And so you would expect banks to do well, and that really stimulated the markets. But we really have significant lingering inflation risk. And if you look at the 10-year Treasury yields over the last 20 days, they're up 13.5%. That means ultimately the interest that we pay on car loans and home mortgages has to rise. And I think Governor Quarles of the Fed came out yesterday and said, we're going to have to raise interest rates earlier than expected if inflation lingers at the 4% rate into 2022, which is maybe 12 to 24 months earlier than expected.
Now, last week, because this is a series, you warned people, we're not going to do a lot of commodities advising because we know how risky that is. But you talked about investing in second-tier cities in their apartment rentals, which just made so much sense to me when we sat down. Second-tier cities are great cities. They're just not megalopolises. It's like Austin and Nashville, places like that. Why does that make sense in an inflationary environment, Charlie?
Well, think about it. Housing was up 20% last year, predicted to go up again 16% in 22, and that's all bleeding over into shelter inflation, which means rental rates will rise significantly during an inflationary period. And rental real estate is one of the best inflation hedges, and that's exactly what we provide access to at Key City Capital.
And how do you do that? I know we're not making an offer to sell security. I'm just curious how somebody who's not investing seven figures can participate in such a thing.
Yeah, exactly. We have the ability for investors to have essentially a fractional ownership in a portfolio of single and multifamily rental properties. They get the benefits of the depreciation and the tax advantages that come with owning real estate, but without the headaches of having to manage tenants and things like that. But what we do at Key City Capital is buy single family and multifamily rental residential housing in landlord-friendly states, the majority of which is located south of the Mason-Dixon line. In fact, 90% of our portfolio in the last 3 years has been located in Texas and southwest Florida between Naples and Tampa. And those markets have been an unintended beneficiary of the COVID economy. We've had significant amounts of population growth from the upper Northeast, upper Midwest, now California. And that economy has a lot of runway left. So rental real estate that we offer, I think Key City Capital has something that no other real estate investing company has. We have access to world-class, ultra-high-performing investments that are going to be very good in terms of the inflationary environment moving forward.
Last question for this week, Charlie. Do you see large institutional investors doing this? Because Zillow stopped buying houses this week. Part of their business plan going forward to own real estate and rent it. I know BlackRock buys real estate like you do and rents it and makes the return. Are large institutional investors going to go out and just buy these things and compete with you and drive up their price even more?
No, we're not really seeing a lot of competition. Most of what we're buying right now is our multifamily units north of 500 units in size. There's very little competition. We bought a $100 million complex in Tennessee about a month ago. We are one of 10 private equity firms in the last 18 months that have been able to buy a property of that size. So we have very little competition in the segments that we operate in, and I don't see a lot of institutional pressure. In fact, investors don't have access to this type of rental real estate through the traditional financial markets. You only have access to it through private equity firms like us. And you know what I advise people to do is have a conversation about how we can help clients protect themselves from a liquidity perspective, from a rate of return perspective, and from a tax perspective with all the things the Biden administration is proposing. How can we help clients protect themselves in the future relative to this inflation?
My own personal account has been sending me, I'd love to give you advice, but I can't give it to you yet because we have no idea what's in the bill. But Charlie Dombeck is a terrific CPA. Give him a call. Or actually, go to keycitycapital.com/Hugh for more on that. Inflation is here to stay, people. Brian Westbury told you that Wednesday. Charlie just told you now. Don't get, there's no excuse. If you listen to Hugh Hewitt Show, there's no excuse to be surprised. Hillsdale Dialogue next on this Friday show as we roll along here on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.